Well, good afternoon. This is Dr. Stan here on Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king, but in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and certainly not illusion or delusion that'll determine just what the future will bring. Now, I have to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and if you disagree, why, give us a call. In fact, we were supposed to have had Terry Reed this afternoon, who's been working on drugs in the Central Intelligence Agency, and he's had one adventure after another just back from Central America. A lot of exciting new information. We're supposed to call in here today, and he hasn't called, so it's got to be just you and me. And if you have a question, you have a comment, why, give us a call here at 464-8295 or 1-800-5-TALK-AT-ME. And that's 1-800-4-8255-28. Otherwise, we're just going to have to talk about some things I'm interested in. I brought in my Howard Phillips Strategy and Issues newsletter. Howard is probably one of the clearest thinkers in Washington, D.C. And talking about the things that are going on in America, one of the most amazing events was chronicled by Bill Gertz in the Washington Times, October 29th, when he talked about how Ralph Davis had lived for some 30 years amid 150 Minuteman No. 2 nuclear missile silos that dot the farmlands throughout rural Missouri. But yesterday, he sat in his car and looked on with his family as Secretary of Defense William Perry and Russian Defense Minister Paul Grashev joined in ceremoniously pushing buttons that detonated an explosion a quarter of a mile away inside Silo M6, once part of a vast missile complex. And what you must understand is we're blowing up all our missiles and the Russians are in full production for war. Does that make sense to you? Our leaders wouldn't betray us, would they? A network of Minuteman IIs and their launch control centers, one for each 10 silos, once covered 5,300 square miles of central Missouri farmland. The silos were built in the 1960s with enough reinforced concrete to withstand a direct nuclear blast and still be able to fire their ICBMs. Now, since 1991, warheads and missiles have been removed from all 150 ICBM systems in that network. And with yesterday's detonation, 18 of the silos have now been blown up. Mr. Grashev said, now he's the Russian foreign minister, you must understand. Mr. Grashev said, the destruction of the silo was one of the most memorable days of my life. Just take a look, not only a Russian, but also the Minister of Defense of the Russian Federation comes here to America to blow up one of the many silo launch facilities, Mr. Grashev said. I think not only my children, but my grandchildren will be talking about this event today for many, many years to come. I bet they are. They're just laughing up their sleeve and saying, this is one of the craziest things that we have ever heard. Now, during his visit to Whitman Air Force Base, Mr. Grashev was viewed three nuclear strategic bombers, a B-52, a B-1, and the Batwing B-2 stealth bomber. He was allowed a rare look inside the B-2 and sat in the cockpit. You and I aren't allowed to because that's confidential, that's secret, but the Russian Minister of Defense can. Of course, he's a good communist. On Friday, Mr. Grashev and Mr. Perry took part in watching a joint peacekeeping operation between 150 Russian soldiers and 250 American troops of the 1st Infantry at Fort Riley, Kansas. The Pentagon said the exercise cost slightly under $2 million, including $900,000 earmarked for the Partnership for Peace program. About 27,000 of the exercises came from the so-called Nunn-Lugar funds aimed at speeding up nuclear arms reduction. Now, in a separate article, it's reported that Defense Secretary William Perry said yesterday that Russia and the United States have agreed on a proposal to modify conventional forces in Europe to permit Moscow to keep more weapons on its southern flank than the pact ordinarily would allow. Russia is particularly anxious to station more tanks and more troops in the southern zone because of the crisis in Chechnya. One major problem is that if the treaty is modified, it could require more of the or all the 30 nations that signed it to approve the changes, so we're just going to unilaterally let them increase their military forces. In a 74-24 vote on October 19th, the Senate approved legislation reducing aid to Russia by the same $200 million with which Russia is paying to Cuba to rent an electronic intelligence gathering device to assist Russia. Okay, fine. Go ahead and call the police. I'm sorry, Bob was just in here giving me some information on Terry Reid, so we're going to call him and see if we can track him down. And so basically Russia has a listening device in Cuba, so it can listen to American intelligence and American telephone calls and all microwaves, so they're constantly monitoring us. Russia is not our friend. It never will be our friend. In fact, it was about 50 years ago when a man named Matlusky addressed the Lenin School of Political Warfare. And this is what he said. War between capitalism and communism is inevitable and will be fought to the very end until one or the other is destroyed. Now, sometime in the future, we'll launch a gigantic peace offensive. And there'll be electrifying overtures and unheard of concessions. And the West, stupid and decadent, will rejoice. And when their guard is down, we'll crush them with a mailed fist. How can our leaders be so blind? Don't they read the CIA reports? The CIA, which has always minimized what the Russians were doing, admits that the Russians are breaking all the treaties we've ever signed with them. They've broken the treaty as far as chemical warfare. They've broken the treaty as far as biological warfare. They're still building a surface-to-air missiles. They're still building intercontinental missiles. Since we don't have any mobile intercontinental missiles, we can't destroy ours, so they're allowed to keep theirs because they wouldn't have anything to... in other words, we couldn't destroy anything comparable. So we're destroying all of our intercontinental ballistic missiles. What you're seeing is either madness or something indeed far more sinister. And the tragedy is that most Americans go blithely along our way, never realizing that there are people in Washington, D.C. who have a different agenda and are allowing America to be unilaterally disarmed as the Soviet Union increases constantly its power and control over our lives. All right, fine. Well, let's see if we have him on the line here. I'm going to just see. Do we have you there, Terry?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, thank you so much for calling. Well, you got in just in time for a break, but as soon as we get back from the break, why, we'll have an opportunity to talk to you about your trip to South America and some of the other exciting things that are happening to you.
Great.
But before we get to that, I want to tell our listeners about some of the books that they ought to be reading. And one of them is a book that actually we got a dozen of them and are already sold out. It's called Freedom on the Altar, and it's written by William Grigg. And it's the story of the move towards the one world government. We got a pretty good deal on it, and we'll pass that along to you. But it starts at the time of the Enlightenment. And that's really when this whole world revolutionary movement began, back in the 1600s. And, of course, then in the 1700s, you had Jacques Rousseau, who believed in a world government controlled by a ruling elite. And the ideas then spread into Ingolstadt, Bavaria, to an ex-Jesuit named Adam Weishaupt, and founded the Illuminati. And, of course, the sources of reference are there if you want to check it out. People always sort of laugh at the idea, but, of course, it's verified by the book written by the Librarian of Congress, James H. Billington. The sources of reference are excellent. And then following the World Revolutionary Movement through the Council on Foreign Relations and the great foundations that make up America's invisible government, Freedom on the Altar, call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. This is Dr. Stan here. I guess this afternoon we finally have with us is Terry Reid, an author. He's produced a video. But the most important thing is he is involved in a lawsuit that could change the course of America if he lives. And I will tell you quite frankly that many people who have challenged the establishment that a way he has have met a very, very strange demise. But he actually is bringing a lawsuit against government officials for government involvement in the drug traffic. And, of course, as you know, almost a third, between a third and a half of our black youth are either in prison or out on parole, most of them for drug-related activities. And yet Terry actually worked for the CIA for a time. Well, Terry, why don't you tell our listeners about what happened and what you found when you were working there for the CIA?
Well, what I found in a nutshell is that there was a CIA element that was, in fact, trafficking in cocaine. And I experienced that firsthand, and when I discovered it, I did what I thought my my CIA bosses wanted, and that was I reported it.
Oh, boy, that was a mistake.
Yeah, I guess that was a rather naive move on my part, but that's a lot of hindsight. Instantly, I was labeled a person who couldn't be trusted, which sort of developed into a persona non grata status, and then after that, the system more or less tried to devour me.
In other words, they tried to destroy you. They accused you of doing just what they were doing?
Absolutely. Someone in government created a profile, computer profile, that was inserted into law enforcement computers, saying that I was a drug trafficker and that I was a really nefarious character, had been known to use my concealed weapon in the past and whatnot, and my wife likewise was...
Sort of like what they did with Randy Weaver, where he was a bank robber and all of these things, to justify the FBI putting out basically a can't and should shoot to kill.
Right. They really, you know, they can really create an interesting profile when they want to and take facts and distort them.
When they want to destroy somebody, they sure go out of their way, don't they?
Yeah, it's called demonizing, I think, is the term that's applied. That way, if someone does shoot you, they think that, in fact, they were enforcing the law. But,
right.
Interesting note at this point is, you know, we know who created that profile now. The author of that is Bill Clinton's former chief of security.
And that's the gentleman that you are bringing a lawsuit against.
Right. And Raymond Buddy Young is the man that we want to drag kicking and screaming in the federal court in January and let him explain that profile and where he obtained that information, because the federal sources that he alleged to have obtained that profile, we've been to all of those people with our subpoena power, and that profile does not exist except in the mind of Mr. Young.
In other words, he intentionally and purposely and maliciously created this profile, and then they set out actually to indict you, and it was just really an act of God that you didn't end up spending the rest of your life in prison.
That's correct. I mean, it's a miracle that I'm speaking to you as a non-felon and a person that can still possess firearms and vote. But be that as it may, the system did work. It took 2.5 years and a lot of resources, a lot of money and a lot of creativity, and a defense team that really, you know, really cared in order to get a federal judge in Wichita, Kansas, to finally see through the smoke screen, and he acquitted me. And in the course of doing that, he left me in a real good position to sue. And that's what my wife and I did in 1991.
Yeah.
And so it's been a 4.5 year ordeal. It'll probably be almost 5 by the time the thing is over, but I have no regrets. We're certainly obtaining the discovery we've always needed to really put on the real Iran-Contra trial, as I call it.
But, of course, the whole thing was covered up in Washington, D.C. Now, you were just down in South America. I understand that you found that a number of the people involved in Iran-Contra actually have warrants out for them in Costa Rica. What's that story?
This even shocked me, and it takes a lot to shock me. But my lawyer and I went down to Costa Rica on a fact-finding trip, and we have in fact located some of the people that were trained at MENA, the Nicaraguan students who we trained to support their own guerrilla war action, and that was an essential element of our lawsuit, we felt, to convince the jury and the judge this all went on. But while we were there, what really opened my eyes was to find out that there's a 2-volume a congressional report. This is by the Congress of Costa Rica in response to our more or less whitewashing of our version of Iran-Contra, the final report by Congress and then the final report by Lawrence Walsh really irritated the Costa Rican government. So they did their own report and just issued a scathing rebuttal to our own congressional findings. And in doing so, they hold the CIA Costa Rican station chief, a man named Joe Fernandez, who you may know is the person that's in business now with Oliver North. They have a company called Guardian Industries.
Sure. I wondered how Oliver got into that, coming right out of the military, and suddenly he's in this this nationwide organization making up bulletproof vests and all these
right.
other things. I wonder, is that a CIA cover or something?
You know, I don't know, but if you look at this really close, And what they all did was blackmailed their way into their present positions. But then by that I mean there's just a preponderance of evidence to prove that our government, the CIA, especially through Mr. Fernandez, was trafficking in cocaine. These flights were going into Costa Rica and out of Costa Rica, that their own government, their own law enforcement, their own army was basically immobilized. They were paralyzed. They could not arrest the people they were trying to arrest. And
why couldn't they? In other words, they were just told by the CIA to keep your hands off of it or else?
Yeah. I mean, we were throwing around tremendous amounts of money, Stan, back in that time frame. You know, Honduras, for example, in 1985, was the eighth largest recipient of foreign aid. That's a country the size of the state of Tennessee.
In other words, you can buy just about anybody in government.
Yeah, and I guess we would threaten them. There are people like Fernandez would threaten them with the curtailment of aid if they interfered in his activities. But what we found out in this two-volume report that, by the way, we're interpreting right now to English, and we hope to make available to the American public, since it really hasn't found its proper forum to be presented, we found out that Caspar Weinberger, former Secretary of Defense, Oliver North, Richard Secord, we mentioned Joe Fernandez, John Poindexter, the Admiral. There's a list of about eight people who, if they set foot in Costa Rica, will in fact be arrested and will then stand the indictment process as criminals and go on trial for drug trafficking,
mm-hmm.
which I think is an amazing story within itself.
I think the amazing thing about Oliver North, everybody says he was exonerated. He really wasn't exonerated. It was simply because he gave testimony about what he had done to a congressional committee telling about how he had done all these dishonest things. And then, of course, when he was tried for it, they said, well, actually, he's done this, and he waived his Fifth Amendment because they gave him the right to make all these statements. And they basically said, if you make the statements, we won't prosecute you for them. That was the only reason he actually had immunity when he testified.
No, you're right.
That he hadn't lied to Congress. It wasn't that he had shredded documents. It wasn't that he'd covered up a lot of things. He'd done all of these things, but it was Congress that gave him immunity. That's the most amazing part of it. And both houses did it, both the Democrats and the Republicans.
Yeah, keep in mind, these were all lawyers. I mean, the fix was in from the get-go, in my opinion. When Ed Meese conducted his famous investigation to find out that Oliver North was the guy who was single-handedly responsible for the so-called Hawk missile sales and all that mess, which that itself was a cover.
In other words, Oliver North wasn't the only person involved.
Absolutely not. But the ironic part is the American people have never heard the truth, and the fix was in to begin with. I mean, they knew what they were doing when they issued limited immunity, and they shouldn't have given any immunity, in my opinion. They should have conducted a thorough investigation. But as you pointed out, Mr. North was not exonerated. He did, in fact, the only thing he stood trial on, after all the other charges were dismissed, was perjury, and he was convicted. And then subsequently, he was pardoned. The conviction was overturned, and of course, George Bush, as he backpedaled his way out of the White House, issued blanket immunity for everyone. And as I said in my book, Compromise, that's a really clever way of issuing yourself immunity, because without those people to testify against him, Lawrence Walsh had no case.
And, of course, the thing was that George Bush had been head of the CIA and involved in drugs for many, many years before Iran-Contra.
Right. It was Felix Rodriguez, the CIA agent, a Cuban CIA agent that was involved in the Bay of Pigs and was a trained assassin to go kill Fidel Castro. That's a personal friend of George Bush's, and that's the guy that I hold responsible for the drug trafficking that I witnessed. And that was the man that I worked for in Mexico.
Okay. So now, where do we stand as far as the case is concerned? You say that actually there are warrants out for the rest of all of these high Americans in Costa Rica because they know they were involved in the drug trafficking, but the American people have never been allowed to know that.
That's right. I mean, for some strange reason, our Congress doesn't want to deal with this. I think that what we have discovered, and I don't mean to take credit for it because my lawyers and my investigators certainly have worked themselves to death on this case, I think what we're finding is the real reason Congress sort of collapsed halfway into the contraherings. If you remember, for a while, it was a lot of chest pounding, and we're going to get to the bottom of this kind of language. And then if you noticed, about halfway through, when Oliver North wrapped himself in the flag, and Senator Inouye, I remember from Hawaii, was starting to get off into charges of Nuremberg allegations, and all of a sudden, that whole investigation just stopped, and they sort of backpedaled and went back into perjured testimony. I think what they discovered, Stan, is what we've discovered, and that is the drug trafficking, the irrefutable evidence that our government, and an element of our government, was bringing in tons of cocaine, was facilitating the importation of cocaine for two organized crime families for distribution, and in return they were getting millions and millions of dollars that they could do with as they pleased, to not only fund wars but to line their own pockets. And that's what they didn't want to tell us, the American people.
Well, it's sort of like when they had the hearings on the special committee, on the congressional committee on the assassination of President Kennedy, and as soon as they decided that there were four gunshots, then immediately the hearing ended, because they didn't want to find out who was responsible for killing the president, and certainly they don't want the American people to find out who's really behind the drug trade. You know, we're fighting a war against drugs, we've been doing it, but we're fighting the war against drugs the way we fought the war in Vietnam. We're fighting this war to lose, and that's the tragedy that most people don't understand, and that's why it's so important that you hear these stories. Well, we're going to have to take a quick break here, and we want to tell our listeners a little bit about America's invisible government. And you can't understand the invisible government unless you understand America's great tax-exempt foundations. If you haven't read our book, Foundations, Their Power and Influence, written by Rennie Wormser, based upon the only congressional committee investigation ever allowed to look behind the shroud of secrecy surrounding the people of great wealth who have a plan in America, and that is to convert America from a free society to a feudalistic society to a fascist society. It's all there in that committee report, actively suppressed for many years. The book has been unavailable, but it's recently been republished by Radio Liberty. Foundations, Their Power and Influence by Rennie Wormser is available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And if you have any questions about it, we have a taped interview I did many years ago with Mr. Norman Dodd, who is the director of research for that committee, available at the same telephone number. And this is Dr. Stan. Our special guest this afternoon is Terry Reed. And just before we get back to Terry, I want to mention a book. We don't carry it. Maybe we should. But going along with everything Terry is saying about the interlock between the mafia, drugs, and the Central Intelligence Agency, a wonderful book written by the brother of the head of the mafia. The head of the mafia was Sam Giancana. His brother was Chuck Giancana. And the book is called Double Cross. And, of course, Sam was taken before a Senate committee. It was to go before a Senate committee, the Church Committee, to talk about the relationship between the CIA and the mafia. And, of course, 5 days before the mafia chieftain was to appear, why, he was rubbed out. He was assassinated. That's why they call it double cross, because Sam Giancana thought that he and the CIA were working hand in hand, and yet before he was to testify, he was summarily murdered. Who murdered Sam Giancana? The most powerful mafia chieftain in America. An amazing story. You really should get that. And yet it tends to interlock with much of what we're talking about. That's Double Cross by Chuck and Sam Giancana. That's the grandson. Terry, your book, why don't you tell our listeners how they can get a copy of your book and your video and your material?
Oh, my book, Compromise, it's a little over a year old, is now out in paperback. I'd like to point out for those hardback owners that it's highly revised and has about 80 more pages of evidence that we've obtained through this lawsuit. But the book and the video documentary that I put together, called The MENA Connection, are available through an 800 service, and that number is 1-800-MENA, M-E-N-A, 850. And I would like to also point out that all the profits from the sales of the book and the tape are going directly into the escrow account for the purpose of taking depositions in this lawsuit.
All right. And, of course, this is probably the most important lawsuit ever held in America, as far as I'm concerned. And the fact that you haven't heard about it shows how effective the degree of control is today over what the American people think. So we'll open up the lines if anybody would like to talk to Terry Reed. Number here, 464-8295, or outside the Santa Cruz area, but anywhere within the reach of our voice, 1-800-5-TALK-AT-ME. Let's see, we've got Tom from Santa Cruz. But before we get to Tom, is there anything else important that you'd like to tell us before we actually start taking calls?
Well, I would just like to touch on one aspect, and I don't know what your affiliation or if you've ever had accuracy in media on your program before, but you know, I've always said, Stan, the reason this story's been so hard to advance is because it doesn't hold party lines.
That's right, and accuracy in media is part of the party.
Yeah, you know, it's not this story. You cannot isolate it just to Bill Clinton.
Right.
It certainly rubs off on a major element of the Republican Party, as we just indicated from this Costa Rican report. I mean, nowhere in that Costa Rican report is Bill Clinton's name. Yet, in the trial, we'll be bringing in a lot of the people from his former administration in Arkansas, and I'm sure he will look pretty poorly before the trial is over. But accuracy in media, when my book first came out, and we had the case in. Case was in court. It was due to go last
September.
A year ago, September. And we were trying to raise money for it, and I was out on the speaking circuit